And welcome to Live from the Festival on BCB 106.6 FM. Coming to you from the Bradford Literary Festival Hub here in the City Park. I'm Maureen Grant.
And I'm Maureen Rowe, and we'll be with you for the next 30 minutes, bringing you all the Literary Festival news, reviews, and interviews.
On today's program, we'll be talking to the poet and broadcaster Kate Fox, who's back in her native Bradford to take part in the festival.
And a bit later on, we'll be hearing from Stephen Mohammed, who appearing at two poetry events tomorrow.
But first up, we're very pleased to welcome Cy Cunningham, the chair of Bradford Civic Society, who's just been leading a tour of the blue plaques in Bradford.
Hello, Maureens.
Hello. Hi. Hello. Welcome. Hi.
We've just about managed to avoid a couple of downpours in the city centre, but we've had a really interesting walking tour around old parts of Bradford to see some of those blue plaques that help tell those really famous stories from Bradford's history. And we've had a very lively discussion and brought some of those blue plaques to life, and a very good audience for it as well. So it's great to see so much going on in Bradford as part of the Literature Festival.
Right, brilliant. Well, of course, we see these plaques from time to time. Bring it to life. Tell us what it's about, and who are we looking at?
Yeah, so if you're walking around any historic town or city in the UK, you'll probably see these little anonymous blue dots on the wall. And the closer you get to them, you'll realize there's a bit of writing on them. And actually, what these are, they're blue plaques that mark where something eventful has happened, or where somebody of note has lived at some point or done something remarkable. And actually in Bradford, we haven't had a blue plaque scheme for many years. So it's a new scheme that we've got, a relatively new scheme in the city, and it helps bring to life some of those stories from Bradford's history. So for example, today we've learned about Felix Rimington Marsh, who was a very famous analytical chemist from the Victorian era, and he did a lot of pioneering work around forensic science. Mm-hmm. And you'll still see Rimington's chemist at the bottom of where,
yes,
I know this is radio, but where we're standing now in Centenary Square, you can see Rimington's pharmacy behind us, and they've got their very own blue plaque as well. We've also seen some blue plaques for notable events that have happened in Bradford. So famously, the Independent Labour Party started life here in Bradford, of course, goes on to become the Labour Party as well. So a lot of really fascinating social history that's all around us, and perhaps as well some quirky history too. So we've seen a plaque outside the Midland Hotel for a gentleman who was a very famous actor called Henry Irving, who tragically died in the city actually in the early 1900s, and he died in the Midland Hotel, and because of that there's a blue plaque to commemorate the site where he passed away. So
I understand they're like above 40
people or plaques.
Plaques.
So in Bradford we've got probably in the whole district around 40 plaques, and in the city centre a growing number, probably about 20 at the moment, but plans for lots more as well.
That is so interesting. And you know, I work with young people, and while you're talking in my head, I'm thinking I'm gonna have to do something with them. It's like, you know, when you never go on those nature trail and you have to find the different things. In my head, I'd like young people to walk around Bradford, of course with a youth worker, and find those plaques and research and work with it. So I'm really interested.
Maybe size the one to work with.
Absolutely. And it's always really fascinating, and particularly actually, as you say, walking around town with young people and pointing things out that they perhaps hadn't realized were there before. It's a great discussion point. And actually, of course, in a city like Bradford, a very young, diverse city, we need to make sure that as many people from as many different backgrounds as possible are involved in our heritage and in making sure that everyone's got a voice at that table as well.
And I'm just interested in sort of how a blue plaque would appear.
It's a really good question. They're very special things, and actually, again, you won't be able to see it because it's radio, but we did, at the beginning of the tour, we had one of the blue plaques that we could give people to hold, and they're very heavy things. They're very special things, because we want them to last for generations as well. So inevitably that means they cost a bit of money to put up, and you know, that it's important that you get it right, that you're commemorating the right sort of people and the right sort of places as well. So generally when someone has a suggestion for a blue plaque, there'll be a lot of discussion around whether it's an appropriate person to commemorate. Do they merit a blue plaque, or would there be something else like a street name or even a statue maybe if they're very special? Mm-hmm. And then of course you have to look at the logistical side of it. So is there a natural suitable place to put it, and can you afford it as well? Because a lot of blue plaques, we have to raise money individually for them.
All right, okay.
I didn't even know that. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's information. I'm sure people out there didn't even know, and just, it's wonderful for you bringing it all to light as well. You know, we're talking about making it work, and for you and letting us know how you navigate all those edges in terms of getting those blue plaques up. Mm. Amazing.
It is, and actually it's really important for cities like Bradford to have something like this, because nationally there's only one official scheme for blue plaques, and it's in London. So you know, like everything else, London gets the lion's share of all the funding. London gets to do things properly, whereas we have to kind of fight for ourselves in the great cities of the north. So it's really important that we're able to do schemes like this. And hopefully with us being UK City of Culture, and we've now got renewed interest in Bradford's heritage and culture and history, we'll find that there are more opportunities to have these conversations, and we'll see many, many more blue plaques for years to come.
Well, I hope so too. And it's really good to be bringing that piece of history to life, because it's a historical thing. You learn about different people who've played a part in an important part in Bradford's history. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic to be able to do that. And I'm pleased to see it's featuring at the Bradford Literature Festival.
Well, you know what, that's a first, and I'm so pleased that it's there as well, because you know what, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who weren't on the tour this time. I'm sure next year when we come back, hopefully we'll be here next year, you know, we are City of Culture, and hopefully, well, I would like to be on there as well, so look forward to seeing you again.
Well, you'll be doing it with the young people before that.
Excellent. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm really pleased to say it was a sellout event as well, so you know, get in there nice and early next year, get those tickets. And hopefully by then we'll have a few new plaques to show along the way as well.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. So thank you so much, Si, for coming and bringing this to life for us. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Right. That's fascinating.
More than fascinating. You know, yes. You know, when you see all these different blue plaques, and I've never, ever understood how they choose them, mm-hmm. how they managed to get there. Mm-hmm. But knowing now, yes, I'll take a bit more interest.
Yes,
with that information that we've just got just now, I will definitely take a good look and read them a bit more as well. Don't just like,
yes, exactly,
look at it and skirt past it, you know, because we do that. But also when you were talking about London, there's so much of them in, you know, they're in London, you see them, you think, well, what did they do to get that? Mm-hmm. Now and the process,
yes,
of being chosen. Yeah. I mean, perhaps I would like to be chosen. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done, you know, but
everything that you currently do. Right. Okay. So we have another guest with us.
We have, and she is she's Kate Fox, poet and broadcaster, and she is in the festival Sonnets and Sarnies, Poets of Yorkshire. So, welcome.
Thank you very much, Maureen's. I'm really enjoying saying Maureen's. I already feel there should be a blue plaque to both of you, just for this broadcast.
National treasure.
Yes.
So, you are going to be, you know, I'm going to be at Poetry
with a Pudge.
Yes. But you know, we'll get on to that. But you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you're about, Kate.
Oh, heck, that's a big question, isn't it? So I grew up in Bradford, actually. I lived in Queensbury, did my A-levels, went off, wanted to become a newsreader. And actually, one of my first radio experience was doing Bradford Festival Radio 30 years ago, and that was a precursor to BCB. And it was a really important time because it kind of got me into radio, and it kind of got me to realise that the arts world is much bigger than I thought, because the festival, a bit like this literature festival, I would say, was very horizon expanding in all sorts of ways. So I went off to university, and then, to cut a long story short, came back to Leeds, to Trinity and All Saints, to do a radio journalism course. Became a radio journalist and a newsreader, as I wanted. But really, within me, the hunger was to be a writer and a poet. And I started off doing that in Newcastle in the early 2000s. Then became a regular topical poet on a show on Radio 4 called Saturday Live. And that kind of gave me a platform to get to do all sorts of more national things, like I was poet in residence for the Glastonbury Festival.
Wow.
And on Saturday Live itself on Radio 4. So I kind of did all that sort of thing. I was just making quite a happy living as a poet and a facilitator. And then the pandemic happened and everything slid into, oh my God, will I ever have a career again? But I, just before the pandemic, did a show called Where There's Muck, There's Bras, which is about Northern women.
Yes.
And that's become a book, a published book that Harper North published,
okay,
which is nice. And that it's probably, maybe behind us somewhere, in the Waterstones thing, I had to look. But I'm here at the festival, I would say, being quite a bit of a jobbing writer-performer, in the sense of the gig I'm doing tomorrow, Sonnets and Sarnies, that's me as poet. But then Poetry with a Punch, which you're coming to,
yes,
that's me as a last-minute stand-in host.
And how good you are!
Exactly. Well, I was unperturbed. I was like, I almost had a hunch I might get a call to stand in for something I did last year. Then I'm chairing events about Emily Bronte on Saturday. Slightly more worrying, because normally, you know, like, people are a cat person or a dog person, or they're a PC person or a Mac person. They're also a Charlotte Bronte person or an Emily Bronte person. Mm-hmm. I've always been a Charlotte person. So I'm like, okay, now is the time to learn about Emily. So I'm doing a lot of that. And I'm doing a really amazing event on Saturday afternoon called One Track Minds. And what they do, right, basically, it's a bit like, they've called it a cross between Desert Island Discs and The Moth and TED Talks. You pick a track, a song that's important to you, and you kind of have to do this 15-minute story about why it's important to you. And what I've done is written about the time I lived in a bedsit in Bradford when I was 16, doing my A-levels, coming to do Bradford Festival Radio, and that opening up my world of Bradford at that time, 30 years ago, because I'm 48. Being all, we're bouncing back, because it's just... And then now, maybe it is bouncing back.
It's bouncing.
It's been bouncing for a long time. But anyway, I'm writing about that. Basically, sorry, that was the longest answer. You just said what to do, what you're about. I was like, here's my life story, Maureen.
Well, I mean, how fascinating. I mean, blue pack.
Oh, it should be for me. Oh, right.
Of course.
I'm going to be on this blue tip for a while, you know. I've been looking at people and thinking, they deserve a blue pack, you know.
But it's so interesting, though. And when I think about where, you know, you've just described your rise to where you are now, and for all those young people out there, and hopefully they're listening, they can do that.
I did the poetry day yesterday at the Bradford the Literature Festival, and that's where you get roomfuls of 200 school kids who, and it was funny, the compere, the first thing Natalie asked yesterday, she asked these bright-eyed kids, key stage two, so they're between age 8 and 11, and she's like, do you like poetry? And I was like, Natalie, you don't know kids, do you? You don't ask them if they were luckily very honest, and they went, no. And of course you don't like poetry. At that point, you've maybe learned a few poems in English and had to analyse them line by line, which is awful. But I was remembering being their age and kind of being fascinated by words, certainly not thinking I could be a poet or a writer, really. And I loved that I kind of performed some poems for them, but also got them to write and do some. They did a poetry rap battle, and they absolutely loved that. And I wasn't masochistic enough to get Natalie to ask them again at the end, do you like poetry now? But a bit of me was like, I hope they've, and I think they would have felt from the whole day from the other poets as well, this sense of, oh, hang on, words are for us. And I, that's what I got when I, John Hegley, comic poet, he came to Bradford to the Dylan's bookshop, as was at the time where we had Dylan's and Waterstones literally next door to each other, which was, no idea why that had happened. Anyway, he came and I was like, he's in our city. And Jean Binter-Breeze,
yes,
poet, she came to the Central Library.
Checkpoints.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she passed away last year.
She did, sadly. Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, she was amazing. And the fact that these poets were just coming to Bradford, yes, where I was, and I would trundle up on my own. I never asked anyone to come with me. That was important. And I just think, wow. And now, you know, however many continents, I don't know how many continents there are, I was never a geographer. Anyway, loads of writers are coming to this city.
Yes.
Flipping heck, the young people growing up now are going to have even more of a message, aren't they, of you can do this, words are for you.
Yeah,
inspired and encouraged and empowered, yeah.
Well, this is what the festival is all about. I'm still thinking about the person who said, I don't like poetry. And there must be lots of young people. What's the one single thing you would say to inspire them?
Well, I would just keep quiet, honestly, at that point. You can't persuade someone to like poetry. What I would get them to do is, without them knowing, write a poem.
Yeah.
I would do the exercise, actually, although it'd be weird if this just happened like on a bus or something. I don't think the young person would be up for that. I don't know how we'd have got to the point where they went, I don't like poetry. But anyway, the exercise where you go, okay, if you were an animal, what animal would you be and why? And if you were a sport or game, what sport or game would you be and why? And if you were a planet, what planet would you be and why? And by the time they've said, I'm Pluto, I'm small, far away, I'm a parrot, I never shut up, I'm Trivial Pursuit, full of questions, you'd be like, you've just written a poem. What? And then hopefully they might see it with something for them.
As listen, I feel as I'm getting a performance here, which is fantastic.
I've got a poem inside of me now. Right now, I've got a poem. Yeah. You know, so we talk about children saying to them, can you write a poem? But I guess if you say to them, do you love stories?
Yeah.
It is the same content, just a little bit different way of saying, because they'll say, oh yeah, we do love stories. But same poetry, yeah. It's a little bit,
yeah,
bit
yeah,
grown yeah. up-ish
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah. It's a school topic, isn't it? No, you're right, stories. Do you like finding out what's going on? Do you like talking to your next door neighbour when you shouldn't be talking to them at school and exchanging the latest gossip about who's getting off with who? Yes, I do. In that case, maybe you would like the poetry of Sylvia Plath. What? Mm. I mean, that might be a stretch. Could happen.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you've got lots of things to tell people, and I can feel that this is, you know, it's going to be, I mean, I'm sure people who are listening think, this is a wonderful session to go. So remind people when you are going to be performing or doing what, you know.
So many times. So the hub here where we are, the festival hub, the big tent thing outside City Hall tomorrow at 12, Sonnets and Sarnies. There's a few of us, Poetry with a Punch tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Amazing poets on Roger Robinson, worth the price of admission alone, but there's loads of other good ones. Friday, we're talking about landscape poetry at 7 o'clock. Saturday, it's the Bronte Day all day in the Midland Hotel. I love the, you've got to come to the Bronte Day. And then 3:30, I think in the Alhambra Studio, it's the One Track Minds thing, the song event. I think that's going to be really, really special, I have to say. That one in particular, all of them are equally brilliant. Everything. But that one, I think, will be a bit magic, maybe.
Yeah. Right. So lots of things to go. No excuse to miss. You can come to all of it, but at least you can catch one of it, if not all.
So. Yeah, exactly. For the, you know, to help towards the campaign for a blue plaque for Kate Fox in Bradford, maybe people need to come to my event.
Right. Yeah. Fantastic. It's just,
you know what, Kate Fox, all I can say to people out there, you can't see her, but I can. She is so excited about her craft, honestly. I just imagine, you know, your school and your, you know, know, that favorite subject of yours and the teacher's talking and the gesticulation that's going on. You can't see what I can. And if you go to at least one of her event, trust me, you'll feel as excited as I am right now.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you. And we wish you well. And I look forward to seeing some of your show.
Thank you so much, Maureen. Thank you.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you so much.
And thank you.
Right. Okay, so that's been a breath of fresh air, hasn't it?
You know what? I love poetry. Yeah. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah.
But the way Kate was talking about it, I feel inspired.
Yes.
I really, really felt inspired that I could go away and write something. I don't know what I'm going to write. Perhaps I'm going to write about Kate in a blue plaque. But, you know, I'm so inspired. And it's the way you go about it. And I like that bit she was talking about, a song. You know, so yes, I enjoyed every bit of that.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant. Right, okay. Stephen Mohammed is an author, writer, poet, and performer who's appearing at the Literature Festival also this year. And BCB's Carol Musk caught up with him and started by asking exactly what he'll be performing. And we'll hear from him now.
On Thursday the 29th, I'm doing Sonnets and Sarnies, which is a lunchtime event at the Festival Hub. And then I'm going to be doing Poetry with a Punch in the evening. It's going to be a really fun day. And I'm going to try and keep my sets quite varied. So anybody who is coming along to both, just be hearing the same stuff in the evening as they heard in the morning.
How would you describe your own work?
I would broadly describe myself as a comic poet. Most of my stuff is humorous in some way, even if increasingly over the last few years it's a kind of a gallows humor. I first and foremost, I like to make people laugh and give people a good time and an entertaining time. And a lot of my sort of creative journey over the last, certainly since sort of 2015, 2016, has been trying to work out how to present political and topical material in a way that isn't a lecture, isn't kind of heckling, and isn't terribly blunt, and still maintains that comic element, that entertaining element. So I can sort of express the same sort of frustrations that people might be feeling and the same kind of alienation, but in a way that's a bit more cathartic and that hopefully puts a sort of interesting or weird spin on it. So I'm not just getting up on stage and saying, hey, things are not ideal, and let me tell you about how not ideal they are. I really like having different avenues. I've been writing prose longer than I've been doing the performance side of poetry. And I've had some novels published, and anybody who's been anywhere near the writing and publishing of novels will tell you that there's a lot of time where you're just waiting for somebody to get back to you, or often for them to not get back to you. So I found getting involved in performance poetry was a really great way to channel my creative energies in a way that was much more immediate. I could write a piece, go to an open mic night, perform it, and immediately get some kind of feedback and some kind of engagement, which meant that when things with trying to get a novel published were frustrating, as they frequently are, I could still be creative in a way that I was getting something back quite immediately. And then conversely, if the poetry is ever getting frustrating, if I find that I've got a block of some kind, I've got other avenues as well. So I really like having those different strands of creativity. I find it very beneficial.
You're an author of some note. You've produced more than one book and a book of poetry. You've done quite a lot, haven't you?
Yes, so I've got a trilogy of young adult superhero adventure novels called the Bitter 16 Trilogy, which came out with Salt Publishing. And the first one of those did quite well. It was a Times Children's Book of the Week when it came out, and it was in a Guardian end of year roundup of teen reads, which was back in 2015. So yeah, that was nice. And then I had a fourth novel, Falling Leaves, come out after the trilogy, which is a sort of standalone adult fantasy novel, which was also with Salt.
While you've been writing, have you changed very much in either what you're writing about or the way that you're presenting things?
Definitely in terms of the way I'm presenting things. I'm constantly learning and trying to improve and take note of my own habits, not necessarily bad habits, but if there are sort of certain tropes and things that I find myself returning to, I try and change that up. I think if you get to a point as a creative where you don't feel you have any further to go or any further to learn or to adapt, then that's a surefire way for your work to get really stale. So I feel like I'm constantly trying to challenge myself. I think a lot of the themes that I return to probably haven't changed quite as much over the years. I write a lot about memory, in my prose certainly, memory and friendship, which is very broad. Having grown up in a very rural area and then gone to live in the city when I went to university, the clash between urban and rural living and sort of going back to small town living after being in a city, that's something I've written about quite a lot. That's the sort of thing that I think you get a different perspective on the older you get. So it is interesting to return to those old preoccupations with slightly new eyes.
You're a teacher as well?
Yes. So I teach poetry and more broadly creative writing, mostly online, which I started doing during the pandemic because I got made redundant from my day job in the first year of the pandemic, which was a bit of a panic initially. But I'd been wanting to go full time with the writing for years and had never quite felt confident enough to do it. So getting that push was quite stressful at the time, but it's ended up being sort of the ideal outcome, really. I really enjoy teaching, and I work with an organization called the Literary Consultancy. So I give feedback and write reports on other writers' novels in progress. I find it's really nice being at a point where I feel able to share my skills in a way that is useful to other writers. I'm not sure exactly when that point happened, where I sort of moved from, as I say, I'm still learning, but moved into a space where I feel like I have enough knowledge and experience to help other writers. So that's very rewarding. And it's just nice being able to share with other writers, because writing can be quite a solitary pursuit.
Great. Well, you'll be in good company at the Bradford Literature Festival, and you're doing the Lunch Bite Sonnets and Sarnies on Thursday, June the 29th.
Yep.
Ralph Dartford, Sana Arsan and Kate Box. That's in the Festival Hub in the City Park, which is the centre of the world for the festival, and right in front of City Hall. So a beautiful, good location, and that's at 12 o'clock. And then again, you are doing Poetry with a Punch with a host of other performance poets.
I'm very, very chuffed to be on this lineup. With Anthony Anaxagoru and Roger Robinson. It's a pretty heavyweight lineup, so I need to bring my A game to this one.
And that was Stephen Mohammed talking to Carol Moss about his two performances tomorrow, lunchtime here in the Hub. And then he's appearing in the evening as part of the Poetry with a Punch event at the Alhambra. That all sounds very, very exciting.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to Poetry with a Punch, so
yes,
I'm looking forward to it as well. But there's so much stuff going on as well.
We're spoiled for choice, really.
Yes. But you know what? We can also look forward to, you know, the City of Culture with all those stuff that's coming up. It's nice. It just feels right that we've got it now, and then City of Culture is coming. Mm-hmm. We'll have more. And we're just helping people to believe in the city.
Yes.
You know, we can put on lots of good things, you know, so yeah, but there's other stuff coming up. So shall we just have a look at what's coming up?
Yeah, yes.
Right, so what's coming up tonight? Bradford Best Kept Secret Poetry and Jazz Speak Easy at Bradford Cathedral. Where is Love? Blooming Buds, One Woman Show at Bradford College, and Stories of Life and Loss by Sarah Tarlow and Clover Stroud. And then we're going to go back to Kate Fox tomorrow.
Yes.
12 p.m. Uh-huh. 12 noon. With Sonnets and Sarnies in the Hub.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
So you can't see it, but it's that big tent, the big top in St. Henry Square.
Yeah.
And then there's at 2 p.m. there's People's Place. So there's a whole barrage of stuff going on.
Yes.
But you know, I would like to see people come out. Uh-huh. And support and enjoy. Mm-hmm. But we've had such wonderful guests, haven't
yeah,
we?
Wonderful. And I mean, you've been to a few things. What's been your favorite?
Oh, so far, I'm going to have to say the Windrush joy, the joy of Windrush, because I just see all my elders out there, all those people who let us stand. So it's a bit of, and we just want to say thank you to all those people out there in Radioland that's listened.
Yes.
And hopefully they are going to go and enjoy some of that.
Yes. I was particularly taken by one of our outstanding journalists, Gary Young.
Yes.
I read him all the time in The Guardian, you know, such a way that it kind of makes you kind of understand his analysis a lot clearer.
Yes.
And he was just a joy to talk to.
So I want to say thank you, Maureen.
And thank you so much for sharing this moment with me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you to everybody out there in radio who listened.
Yes, and this is goodbye from BCB 106.6 FM, and we are leaving the Bradford Literature Festival Hub at this point, and we'll be joining you again tomorrow at about 5:30. So look forward to that. Thank you very much. Thank you.